Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you. And part two, we will be entering into the Justice Club. So after we enter into the world of authors and experts, hang on, because we will be entering into the Justice Club on part two.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
That's right. There's very little justice in the world today. And we're going to explore that with our own very own American citizens. But right now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our returning guest. She is a very dynamic and prominent guest, and this is her name, Joyce Alexander Black. And she is a native of Southern California. She holds a master's degree in clinical psychology with a pre-med background. She specializes in individual couples, family therapy, and coach working with organizations such as the YMCA. She's into churches, schools, and hospice training, working with adults and couples. She has training in NLP Master Practitioner, as well as a hypnotherapist and stress management coach. She has worked at Disney, Paramount, NBC, ABC, Universal Studios, and more. She's worked and lives internationally between London, England, and Los Angeles, California. She's been awarded the Irwin International Writers Award. She has been published in two books. And, sorry about that, Chopped Liver and the Spirit of David. Currently finishing her book on relationships and communications, hoping to be out by September of this year. So we're going to ask her about that as well. And when we enter into the world of authors and experts. And she is an expert. And what we're going to discuss today is we're going to talk about the great darkness that everybody in the media and in government is talking about and online about the dark winter. And what do they mean by that? As skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, and the food and gasoline and electricity and rent and mortgages and housing increases, and our job wages do not increase with the excessive cost of living expenses skyrocketing for the average American and for the indigent and the elderly. So this is a very serious issue, and how we can overcome it and turn light on a dark winter. We will turn the lights on, and we will be positive, and we will succeed. So after we take a break, I will come back. We will enter into the world of authors and experts, and we'll be speaking to our fabulous guest, Joyce Alexander Black, in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because you need to listen up so you can brighten up your life. And hopefully we're going to give you some information that will brighten up your winter as well when you brighten up your Christmas lights. That's a great time of the year, isn't it? I love Christmas. I just love the spirit of Christmas, and I love giving. So that's more fun to me than receiving, because it just gives you a good, warm feeling to give something to somebody. It doesn't have to be expensive, just from the heart, the mind, the spirit. And also, you can bake it or make it yourself. You don't have to go out, spend tons of money if you're crafty or you're a baker or you want to make a meal for somebody, especially somebody that may need a meal. That would be fantastic. Or give some toys to maybe a family you know that is having some tough times. Is another great thing to do. So now let me tell you a little more about, if you missed the first part, about our dynamic guest, Joyce Alexander Black. She's a native of Southern California. She holds a master's degree in clinical psychology, with as well as a coach and hypnotherapist. She specializes in individual couples and family therapy, and she works internationally from London to Los Angeles. Her records are on iTunes, and her name, just type her name in, and you'll find her and her seven records. Her book on relationship communications, we're going to ask her about, was to come out in September, but I haven't spoken to her since then, so we're going to ask her if she has her book out as well. And of course, she'll be giving out her contact information too, so you can check out her website information about our special guest. So right now, we're going to say hello to Joyce Alexander Black. Hi, Joyce. Welcome back to Columbo Chronicles.
Thank you so much, Rose. It's great to be here. It's such a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing and helping so many people.
Well, thank you. You know, that's what life's about, is giving a hand up, not a hand out, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And my book's not out just yet, because I just have so much I keep on wanting to add. And it's one of those things where I just have to put an end to it and get the book out, because so many people need it right now.
That's what happened to me with my first book, Fight Back Legal Abuse. It became an award winner, and it ended up 5 stars, featured in magazines, newspapers, all over the place. But it took me 9 years, because I kept learning more things about the legal system I felt was important for the readers to know who were interested in that topic. And so it did. I kept adding, and finally I had to do exactly what you said and just go, this book has to get out there. I can do this forever.
I know. It's like someone told me, the Beatles said when they were doing, you know, somebody interviewed them and said, which album would you like to change? It's like every single one. Why? Because there's, as you grow, as you learn, whether you're a musician, an actress, a writer, you always want to add. And if you look at Freud and some of his old stuff, I mean, that I would just never go across today, you know, just so many things that he did. But for those times, and then you look at his later work, it's almost as if the process of life, we learn, we go through agony, we go through pain, we go through suffering, and then we learn something, and we learn about love and forgiveness, and the most powerful thing in the world is love, and how to connect to it when you're in pain, and how to not spend so much time in that place, and how to live a life that you can have, you know, all aspects be present, but not necessarily at the same time. So it is a journey, and I am determined, because there's always book two and there's always book three. So I definitely plan to have it out soon. So thank you so much for remembering and asking. I appreciate that. And congratulations on your website. It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I've been getting so many compliments on the website. I also want to thank Regency Publishers for, you know, presenting it as, you know, something I'm really proud of, and welcome everyone to take a look at it. And now that you brought it up, my new book is Obamasaurus,
wow.
And it's a political satire on redistribution of wealth and depopulation and how the Judeo-Christian dinosaur nation was depopulated, in a short adventure story with humor and a very important message for mankind at the end. Will humanity survive? So I hope people will check it out and check out my website, which is rose-colombo.com. And that's enough about me. Let's get back to you and our topics.
I just wanted to say, please let me know when that book is out, because I definitely want to buy it.
Oh, it's out now. It launched. It's actually, today's the first day it's being presented at the International Book Fair in Frankfurt, Germany. And they just sent me a photo of it on the shelf at that international, it's the biggest one, International Book Fair. I hope some producers and filmmakers will take a look at it, because I made it for an animated film. And there can be, like you said, a sequel two and a sequel three, because I left the ending open. And so see what happens to Professor Noah and how it changes his life.
I love that. I wish you the best. Fingers crossed. Keep me updated.
Thank you.
I think that's wonderful. Absolutely. Okay, so what I really was thinking about, in a way to help people, I had some people over for dinner the other night, and this one person told me this story that was just, it hit my heart so much. Not going to say names, but getting on the ball to be a famous musician. And there was a lot of problems with the company. At one point, he was very successful, very wealthy. And at another moment, he was like, had $5 to his name. And he was waiting for a bus, and a beggar asked him for money. And he's like, okay, this is the moment in life. Am I a person who wants to be a victim, or am I a creator? Am I a person who looks at myself as hopeless or hopeful? And like, I'm putting a lot of additional thoughts in there, but he just basically said to me, he took my, that he had like whatever amount in, and he gave the guy like a dollar or $1.50 or whatever it was. It was like imagine the percentage of your bank account to what that was in that moment. And I said, well, this, I love this, because I also heard a story with Tony Robbins, and that there was a moment in a restaurant, I don't remember exactly the quote, but something to that effect, where he was like down in his luck, no money, but then somehow he paid for this child's meal. Because of his mindset, because of, it's all about, you know, there's mindfulness. And it reminds me of when I used to work with the Department of Mental Health, and I was working in Los Angeles, and, you know, while doing my internship, and there was some very, very heavy cases. And this one man, he was an artist. I don't know if you've met, maybe you've met him in Santa Monica on Third Street Promenade. No hands, no legs. And he paints with a paintbrush in his mouth. So my question, and so here I am working with people who are getting lots of money, not to say they don't need it, because they definitely do, because they're dual diagnosis. So it had to be two severe major disabilities. And yet, not one of them thought, what can I do with, even with this disability? And here's a man, has no arms, no legs, paints from his mouth, and he goes, I wasn't about to get on disability. My wife and I live quite well with my art. I'm just going, wow. And there's so many stories. Like through time, you look at the story of like people, there's a book called The Chosen, and there was a man who was in the Holocaust. And instead of looking at the bad, he looked at the good. I mean, not the good. I mean, he looked at, like, how to make the best out of the situation. Like, in every situation, we're going to have tests. We're going to have tests with people around us. I remember I was going through a very difficult time. Someone very close to me died. And I was at my niece or nephew's graduation. And their young brother said to me, I have most stress in my life. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm dealing with somebody's death. What is the worst thing that could happen to you? I don't say it that way. I'm thinking it, right?
Right.
I just found out the worst news in my life. I go, okay, what is that? He goes, there's no more playtime when you get to first grade. You have to do homework when you get home. There's no milk and cookies. I went, oh.
That's tough, you know.
But it is, though, really. You know, think about it. When you always have playtime and you no homework. And then his thought was, I don't get playtime till I'm old and I retire. Because once I start getting homework, then there's school and then there's homework and then there's a job and then you have to take care of your family. And I said, yeah, it kind of works like that. He goes, wow.
you know, you remind me of a moment when we were in San Francisco. I was with my daughters and my daughter and granddaughter, and we were walking downtown. We were going to go shopping, get some Starbucks, you know. It's not my favorite coffee, but it's theirs. I like McDonald's coffee.
Really?
So, oh, yeah, and that's the best. And so anyway, we were walking downtown to go to the coffee shop and do a little shopping, and out of the corner of my eye, I don't know why, I saw this lady and her eyes caught my eyes. She had beautiful blue eyes. And I just kept walking with my daughters. And then all of a sudden I stopped and I said, I have to go back. And I go back where? I said, we have to go back to the corner. I said, there's a lady in need. I think she had a cup. And there's a mom, you know. And I said, give me your cash because I don't carry cash. So they're digging in because nobody does. They didn't really carry that much, but we got together and got about $10, you know. So we walked back to the corner, and I walked up to her and I said, "Here you go," and I put it in her cup. And oh my God, if you could see somebody's eyes light up and her face, and she started smiling. She was so happy, and she's like, thank you so much. You made my day. It's my birthday. Thank you.
Oh,
and I said, oh, well, happy birthday. And then we start saying happy birthday, and then we start singing happy birthday to her. And then all the crap start coming around, and they're putting money and telling her happy birthday in her little cup. And I will never forget that because it was like a God thing. He told me to go back, you know, and not pass her up. It was her birthday. So you never know whose day you're going to make, you know, happy. And it just happened to be her birthday, which made it special to me, too.
100%. It's like if you don't like your narrative, change it. Now, thinking about, like, here's these two people or different scenarios, and people get to choose. But we didn't ever take a class that taught us this. This is the things that we needed most in life is to learn how to do this. Like, I have a friend who is having some challenges in her business, financially, big ones. So she said, oh, I must give more charity. I said, huh? And I wasn't familiar with that. Like, okay, you already give your 10%, you already give a lot, but now you're going through difficult times. She goes, yeah, that's when you have to give more. I said, interesting. And did work. Her business became a success. Now, I'm not saying to everyone, this is the key to life, because I don't know. I'm just a human being like everyone else. I'm just being an observer, watching that people are going through a very difficult time, and they're becoming very selfish, very narcissistic, very me, me, me. I have to do this. I have to do this. And don't get me wrong, it's especially difficult in Europe. People are making choices in very, very cold weather. Do I eat or do I heat the house? And people who are already in a very small, let's say one room apartment, they're having to have other people move in with them. So imagine two families in one small apartment and the stress. It's absolutely unbelievable. And it's going to probably cause more homelessness. And it's really a time where I really want to help people with their thinking, with their narrative. Who am I going to be in this world? If, let's say, you're in a scenario where there's two households where there's used to be one, maybe there's a way to take that and shift it to a positive. Maybe there's a way to work it. So, wow, now we have a community. Now we're going to learn how to communicate better. Because the biggest problem is people don't say things like the truth. I found that also with some people that I've been working with, and they go, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. But meanwhile, you're not talking to them. Meanwhile, you're holding resentment. Meanwhile, you're blah, blah, blah. Do you think that's helpful? But if you shoot the truth and you just go, hey, I didn't like this. I felt. And it's always good to start with, I felt angry, I felt resentful, I felt hurt, whatever your feeling is, to express it. I mean, there's so many things that are happening. And if you maybe look above it and say, like, maybe, I don't know, but my guess is a possibility that maybe God is doing this to wake us up, to say, you guys have been like very me, me, I, selfish world. And I need you to stop being around all your computers and very much me. And I need you to communicate with people. I need you to.
Well, I think what's happening, Joyce, is that these computers and the iPhones and the phones and all this have caused people to become isolated and not think outside the box and communicate one-on-one, because we are human beings. We do need to hug. We do need to kiss. We do need to communicate with each other one-on-one. And that's been a real issue with me for a long time about you go to lunch with somebody and they've got their phone out. Hey, don't invite me to lunch if you're going to worry about what's on your telephone, because I'm, you know, that's
rude.
Unless
you're a doctor.
It's just plain
no
rude.
Emergency.
Right. Yeah, unless
you're a doctor.
But most of them are not emergencies. And so it's just plain rude. And so don't waste my time if you don't want to have a communication with me, you know, and go have lunch by yourself and your phone. And so,
I understand,
but not
saying.
Just that. I just wanted to say that what you were saying is true, because we are losing touch as human beings with what other people are saying to us. We aren't listening. We are all about ourselves, and we all do it. And we have to learn and practice, because that person may be telling us something very important, and they may be on the verge of jumping off a cliff or something, and we're ignoring it. Maybe just one listen and kind word to them could bring them back. We don't know, because one time I was, when I was doing radio shows, and I had an assistant, we went to San Diego to do a recording because she couldn't come to the studio. And so it was a single mom with three daughters, and she was having a tough time. I've had them. Mm-hmm. You've had them. We've all had them, mm-hmm. had to pull ourselves up by ourselves. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. And keep going. And so anyway, we're there, and the little girls kept saying, "Mommy, I'm hungry. I'm hungry." And she'd say, "Well, okay, we're going to go to the store after this, you know." Well, I knew the cupboards were bare in my heart, okay? So I had to go to Easter Fills and do a show with these other two ladies who were hurting. So I drive all the way to L.A. with my assistant. We drive over there. We do the radio show for Easter Sills. And that bothered me so much. I said, "I'm going back to San Diego. You want to go with me or you don't? I don't, you know, it's up to you." He goes, "No, I'll go with you." I go, "Okay." At first, he thought I was crazy. And so then we drive back to San Diego. It was Easter, the day before Easter Sunday. I said, "Okay, I got to buy her some food. I know those kids are hungry." And I didn't have a whole lot of money either. But I just felt, oh, I got to put that aside. So I don't care. So I bought them things like ham and rice and things that would last at least a week, you know. And then I saw these chocolate Easter bunnies, and I got the kids three Easter bunnies. And I thought, because I don't want to make this look like a care package. Then I saw this huge empty basket on display, and I said, "Can I speak to the manager?" The manager came over, and I said, "You know what?" I go, "Can I buy that basket? It's empty." And he goes, I said, "I'm going to take a package to a family." And he said, "Oh, you can have it. Don't worry about it." And so it was perfect. So we put it all in there, wrapped it back up with bows, and then I knocked on their window. On their door, I mean, and I could hear them through the window. They were jumping on their beds, you know, kids doing that. And so they said, "Who's there?" I could hear they were shocked because it was now like 8 o'clock at night. And I said, "It's the Easter Bunny." And so they opened the door and they saw this me and this huge basket, Easter basket. And they came out and they were hugging me and they were crying and they were so happy. And so the next day, the mom calls me, and she said, "I can't thank you enough. We were hungry. I don't know how you knew that." She goes, "But we cooked our meal, Easter Sunday meal, that night after you left." And she goes, "I can't thank you enough." Yeah. So you also, my point was, you have to use your human senses that are telling you something's wrong. Somebody needs help, right?
Definitely. And also, we can't listen to other people. For example, sometimes when I feel like sharing and doing something for someone else, and I would say something to somebody saying, "You know, I'm going to do X. Would you like to participate?" "Oh, I don't think you should worry about that. I think this person's fine." And you know what? Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. But it's not for you to listen to anyone else, but your inner voice, because that's what's so important. And, you know, it's like when you start to deal with like that kind of story where you're really sharing, where you really connect to like, "I really feel like I can do something to make a difference." It's so important. I mean, I'll tell you something that I really don't talk about, but my cousin was dying of leukemia. And I asked him what his dying wish was. And this is before they had that whole, all these different movie stars and people doing things for people. And he said was to go to USC's Science Museum. And I was like, "Huh, okay, a lot of things that would be on my list, but that wouldn't be mine." But it was his. And he wanted to see the anatomy. He was very much into science, and he was really, really intrigued by that. Only problem was with leukemia and children going to science museums and museums, there's bacteria, there's flus, there's colds. So I was trying to figure that out. So I called the LA Science Museum and I said, "Look, this is the case. I don't have time to go through all the paperwork or talk to X amount of people. I need to go to the head person. What I need is I need you to open the LA Science Museum before the kids come in the morning. So it had, and the night before, spray with Lysol everywhere so I can bring him in and have him have his dying wish. And person after person, then this finally got to the top person. And he's like, and who are you? I said, you don't know me, but I'm a person who doesn't give up. That's who I am. And guess what? You're a person who doesn't give up because you're in the position you are. So I'm asking you heart to heart, forget that I'm not famous, blah, blah, blah. Heart to heart, human to human. My cousin's going to die. If it was you and I was in your position, I would make sure that happened. Can you do that for me? He said, all right. I said, I just need one more thing. He goes, you do you? I said, yes. I said, I need a tour guide. I don't know where I'm going. So he's like, so let me get this. You want me to open the Science Museum before it's open to the public, let your cousin in, get a tour guide. I said, yes. He goes, all right, we'll make it then. And then I said, I don't want him just because it's not easy to travel with his IVs and everything in a wheelchair. So I said, but I don't want him to be in a disabled van. So I called a limo company and I said, how would you like to do something good and donate some time? And he goes, all right, I'll give you the limo, but you have to pay the limo driver. So let me talk to the limo driver. And he's like, really? I said, yeah. So I talked to the limo driver. It wasn't about the money. It's about getting a community of people that show up. So he unfortunately did die. But what happened is he got this dying wish with a lot of amazing people that he never knew. And people do want to do good. People want to share, but maybe they don't believe in themselves enough to make phone calls like that. Like I would never do that for myself, I don't think. But I did that for him because to me, it was like, okay, this is, and for me, it was an odd, wish for being on Earth, but every human being is different. That's what he wanted. So I did the best that I could. And I'm just saying like, look, you got this basket. I mean, so many people are out there who have the ability to also help other people, but it's just giving them the opportunity to show up. And we are going into the holidays, and what you're saying, absolutely, people are trying to figure out, how do I still give a gift? And I've had people over dinner, and I had this woman who has money, but she made me two really beautiful breads. And it was like, that's so nice, right? And that was like, it filled our hearts. And exactly. Whether you have money or not, you know, it's about giving, it's about receiving, it's about sharing, it's about a community of connection in a circle. And so many people can do other, I mean, I also got, you know, people bring other things. Some people bring a flower. Sometimes just bringing a flower to someone and maybe a cookie to say, you know, I care about you, I love you, or whatever it is. And I do know that what we're going to be going through and what people are going through now financially is not something that to minimize. What I'm saying is, let's just change the narrative on it. You know, rather than looking at it as the glass half empty, look at it half full. You're alive, you're above ground, you're surviving. You're not just living, you're surviving this life, and you're doing it your way. Okay, there's going to be a lot of difficulties, and it's just important what we can do with how we think about it.
Well, I think also, you know, like, when I was growing up, the neighbors were always there for my mom and she was there for them. It was a different world, you know, and than it is today.
Yeah.
Because people don't even know who their neighbors are today a lot of times. So, or who they're, you know, the community, they don't even know a lot of people in their community. And I think that's missing in the American way of life, because like if mom needed a cup of sugar or some bread, she didn't get to the store, they always repaid each other back. And that was important, I thought. And like my dad, I would see him make a deal with another man and they would shake hands. That was it. There was no legal contract. You kept your word as a man and that was it. And so I grew up, you know, like watching these things. And today, you know, everything is about money, 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 material, me, me, me. And I think, you know, it can be about you, but it also has to have some fulfillment. And I think the fulfillment comes when you go outside of yourself and you say, well, I, you know, like you said, you know, I don't have a whole lot of money right now, but this person needs it more than I do, so heck with it. And you just do it, you know. And so, you know, like I tell my daughter, it's like, oh, look, my daughter and my granddaughter, I said, look, we don't need, I mean, if we could, I mean, we went and got our coffee, but I'm like, even if we couldn't afford our coffee, look how happy we made her, you know. It was her birthday, the lady in San Francisco. And so it's things like that that you don't forget. You know, I could still see her eyes and how happy she was. And it made our day, too.
Yeah.
And to this day, my granddaughter, this is a few years ago, and today, even now, my daughter tells me, she goes, you know, Mom, Sierra gives money to, you know, people who are homeless, you know, for downtown or whatever. And I said, Sierra, what are you doing? You know, and she said, Grandma was right. You know, we don't know where they came from or what shoes. We're not in their shoes. So we don't know how they got to where they're at today. And we aren't supposed to judge them. And that's what I did tell her. I told her at the time, I go, you never know how people got to that point. So we're not their judges. It doesn't matter what they do with the money. It's that they may be hungry. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. And you make also a very good point about judging. And this is a problem that I find so many people apt to do. They just go into, well, you did this, you know, and that's, and it means this. But just going to I wanted to tell you this story because you're reminding me of this. When I was, 18, I don't remember what age I was. I went to a seminar and it was really interesting. And it was like, I was like 1.5 minutes late. Oh my gosh, you would have think I did like the worst thing. And it really taught me how important our word is and also about giving to others. And when I went, I was on crutches and I was taking my nephew to Subway and he wanted a drink. And I, at those times, that was a dollar and I gave him two. And he came back and I said, so how much was it? And he's like, well, let's go. I'm like, uh-huh. How much was it? And he's like, let's go. I'm not going up those stairs. I said, fine. And how much was it? He was $1.01. The guy said, don't worry about it. I said, yeah, but did he say he's going to pay for it or is he going to take it out of the till from the company? He goes, I didn't ask him. I said, okay. So I walked. He goes, well, I'm not going up. I said, fine. So I'm sitting there with my crutches going up the stairs. And I said to the guy, look, especially with children, but in general, if you say it's okay, then it has to come out of your pocket. Otherwise, it's stealing, and I can't be part of that. And he's like looking at me going, I cannot believe you. But, you know, till this day, my nephew, you know, always remembers that. It has taught him to be honorable in a way that's like over the top. And some people think that's over the top, but what is our word worth? I mean, I'm no angel, but I'm just saying, like, we can just up our game, keep on upping our game, because we're really going
to try. Joyce, at least we need to start trying, right? To get out of ourselves and try to help other people, because there's always somebody worse off than we are, right? And I always tell my kids, I go, look, do you have your health? you have wealth. I said, take care of your health. That is wealth. I go, because you can have tons of money, and if you're lying in a bed and you can't walk or you're suffering with pain, I go, all the money in the world isn't going to matter without your health. Sound mind, sound body.
100%. 100%. And it's like, how do we get strength when we're going through the dark times, financially, emotionally? It's like everything's being brought into all this darkness. So when there's so much darkness, you know, if you go into a room that's completely dark, you just got to turn the light switch on. So that's what I really want
to do. Which is not easy to do for everybody, right?
It's not, but there's a good thing is looking at, like, for example, wherever you are in the world, we have now so much online, and there's groups like people who have, you know, dependency, any kind of drug, alcohol, or, you know, Al-Anon meetings. Those are 24 mm-hmm. hours a day. So no one really ever has to feel alone. It is sometimes essential to feel alone because that's where the real work goes. And if you don't have that, you don't do that inner work. So that is very important. But it's how to overcome in a time and not stay stuck in it. Because I know people who are stuck in depression and grief far, far, far too long. And it's all of a sudden define their life rather than having the life that they want. But one of the things that I do is I have these recordings on stress management for adults and for kids. And my little nephew, who said to me about stress, what he did say to me was, well, why don't you make one? Because I had a stress management recording then, those days called CDs, but now they're digital downloads. And he said, well, why don't you make one for kids? And I'm like, okay, what would it be? And we kind of, like, I talked it through with him, worked with some other people, produced it. And it's helped so many children with stress. And it's also a hypnosis with a kid, an adult now, but a kid at the time. And then I have bereavement on humans, cat, dog, and horse, and headache relief. And those are so important. So if you get a chance, please go to iTunes. Just put my name in or go to my website, joycealexanderblack.com. And, you know, I just think that what we're about to go through, what we're all going through, I love your idea of how to give to others when you see people. And, you know, talking about neighbors, you really hit a chord with me because I have a few neighbors who are elderly, and I ask, you know, would you like me to bring you a meal or something? It's like, you know, very, you know, stoic character, this one. No, I don't need it. I can take care of myself, you know. But then when I make cookies, I'm like, oh, I made a whole bunch of cookies. I can't eat them all. Would you like some? Oh, yeah.
I do that with my neighbor across the street because she has a lot of health issues. And I just love her. Her name is Christy. And she's just so cute and funny. But the doctors, it was because of the doctor's bad surgery. And so whenever I bake, I always do the same thing. I go over there because she can't bake anymore. And I just go, oh, I made all these extra cookies or this, you know, banana bread or whatever it is. You know, I like to bake anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I, you know, and she just put the smile on her, mainly her husband's face.
Right. Yummy. I really love that because also I noticed a neighbor who made lasagna. And I thought about it, like people are saying, well, meat and chicken and fish are so expensive these days. Macaroni and cheese, and you can throw little meat in there, some vegetables. You could just kind of play around with whether it's the full-on lasagna or like a macaroni and cheese lasagna type thing. No, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't necessarily cost a lot. Like, do you remember those hamburger helper packages?
Oh, yeah,
packages?
You can make them.
So stuff like that. It wouldn't cost that much. I would be afraid to look at the back at, you know, some of these boxes. They're great to eat, but maybe they're not necessarily as nutritious as making it at home. But the idea of like just like whatever, whenever you're in most pain is when you should, when it's most important to give. And I found that really challenging because I was remembering a time I had an operation and I was really thinking about that. I was thinking about, it's all about me right now. Me, me, me. And I went, okay, I need to stop that. I need to make it so I'm giving to other people, do more volunteer work. Do you think whether it's, you know, when I couldn't do much to write a check, there's certain things, even if it's giving compliments, so important. And I think that's really the narrative I want people to start thinking about is, how do I change it up? How do I bring in the light? How do I start thinking of myself as a person who is here to give, even if it's tough? And I'm telling you, like, this operation I had was so tough, but guess what? That made me want to give more. And all the things that I've read, all the things that I've learned as a person has always been about sharing, caring, giving, and not stay focused on the self, even when it seems like that's the most important thing to do. It's when you should do it the last, least.
Well,
you know what I mean by that?
I have to tell you that when I started an organization, Women Fight Back, and I was helping.
I'm sorry, what was it? What is it called? Women Fight Back?
Oh, it was called Women Fight Back, yeah. And it was about family law courts and basically, and how the gender bias was going against the women and they were finding themselves without their children and ending up in jail and all kinds of stuff for trying to fight back. It was quite a story. And so anyway, I decided I had bad experiences with corrupt judges and lawyers. And so not all of them, but enough. And so I decided I can't be the only person who's seeing the right is wrong and wrong is right. So I created this organization and I said, well, how am I going to find these people? Well, I did find them. And so by creating a newsletter. And so anyway, what happened was what I did find as we're talking here is that there were people who were, and many of them came to the organization who had injustices and legal abuses done to them and supported us. And what I found was that some of these people, if I hadn't started that organization and set up meetings every week, people were ready to commit suicide because of what happened to them in the legal system. And
right.
They were like at the end of their ropes. And so here, because people didn't know about all the injustices back then, in the 90s. They didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to hear it. They didn't understand it. It didn't affect them. So they didn't want to hear about it. But when these people came together who had been victims, I said, okay, I am a victim, but I have become a survivor. And that's what's important. We all need to become survivors and move on with our lives because we cannot survive and move on if we don't become survivors. So we have to take something that happened to us and turn lemons into lemonade so we can help other people in the future, and this won't hopefully happen to them. And so I'm telling you, it was amazing. People were calling me from around the country, and they were so happy that there was finally somewhere to vent, somebody who believed them, somebody who would listen. And just listening made them feel better, that they finally had people around them who understood what happened to them and the pain and suffering that it caused them. And that, I mean, I have letters from these people. And,
beautiful.
It was amazing, you know, but my whole thing was it goes back to communicating, like you were saying. It goes back to humans communicating with each other because they felt isolated. Well, I felt isolated. I was like, nobody wants to hear what's happening to me and my kids, you know, right. And it was horrendous. Right. And so I said, I'm not going to have a pity party. I'm going to turn lemons into lemonade and help other people. And that
is the way
expanded.
Yeah, that is totally the way. And I love that you did that. And it's so important because what happens is not only were everybody, including yourself, abused by the system in how each one individually had it, but then the loneliness because you had no one to talk to. It's like people who go through relationships and they don't have that source of help, and they wear their friends out, or the friends aren't therapists, so they don't really know how to help them. And sometimes their friends judge them, or they say, oh, that guy or that girl is narcissistic, or this person. And it's like, well, if you're not perfect, then everyone's like out the window. Well, guess what? None of us is. But how to stay married in a relationship is not always easy. But how do you stay happy and married? That's also not so easy. And the whole process of having a relationship, and it doesn't have to be with a male or a female, it could be male and male, female and female, or any form, or even brother and sister, or, you know, person and parent. It just doesn't matter what sex, but it's about, do I feel like I deserve to express how I feel, get heard, and then I validated for what I went through. Now, that doesn't mean that makes you wrong. Sometimes it will. However, my message is to make sure that each person gets heard. Now, they may not get heard by the person that harmed them because sometimes that person doesn't have the capacity. They haven't grown up enough to be able to hear a person without taking it, you know, as if they're a bad person, but just to hear it and say, yeah, you know what? I am sorry. I could have done better. This is what I'll do in the future. And most people don't have that skill or that knowledge of how to get there. And with what you're saying, creating a group so people who are in the same boat, who all have the similar experience, and creating a community so it's not alone. And taking, instead of being the victim, you became the creator. You became the survivor. You didn't think of, you know, self alone. Yes, of course you had to at some point. But then it's like, now I want to help others. Look what you created. That's a miracle. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
I believe in miracles. I believe
yeah,
in miracles.
Yeah, me too.
What happened is after I came out of the courtroom because I grew up believing that, you know, this is what we were taught. You know, judges were all fair, objective, upheld the law, and attorneys protected you. Some do, some don't. Judges are, some are fair, some aren't. But you don't know what you're going to get in the mix. So you don't know what's happening behind the scenes either, and especially when there's a lot of money involved. And so I think it was more of God wanted me to learn a lesson, you know, about, I was very trusting person, very, very trusting, and too trusting, actually. And so, but that's how I was raised and grew up, going to Catholic school. They teach you all this, and then my parents did too. And so you didn't really ask questions, you know, and so you just believed them. And so it was a real shock to me that my whole world of justice had been turned into disillusionment. My illusion of justice was disillusionment. And so when I came out of the courtroom and I said, gosh, what's right is wrong. What's wrong is right. This can't be, I can't be the only person this is happening to. There has to be other people out there hurting. I got to find them. And because nobody talked about this. And that's another thing about the communication, right? Back in the 90s, even in the 90s, nobody talked about this, not even on TV until the late 90s. And it started coming, you know, more shows started coming out. But I'd also created a cable TV and radio shows too, interviewing the victims and then interviewing a lawyer or a politician or a community leader to see if we could figure out some solution for these issues. So it wasn't just about the problem, it was about a solution too. And so I felt that was important. And not just, you know, here's the problem and on, and let's forget about it. You know what I mean? And so
right.
I thought that was really important.
It is so important. Yeah, and the way that you go the way that you go about it is very admirable, because a lot of people, again, are you the creator or the victim? If you're a victim, it's poor me, I'm hurting, look at me, look how I've been treated. And if you're a creator, it's like, okay, how can I help others? Because I'm not the only one going through this. How do I do something so I look at also what I could have done differently so I can learn from this? I mean, it's unfortunate from like coming from a family where you are so sheltered is so beautiful because it creates such a safety net. And it's unfortunate that we live in a life that we can't afford those anymore. It's like, you know, I remember going to Wales, which is in Cardiff in the United Kingdom. It wasn't that long ago. It was maybe, you know, somewhere around 10 to 15 years ago. And I see kids going on their bicycles on the streets and no parents are there. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm a girl from LA. What's going on here? And, you know, I talked to one of the parents. It's like, why would you worry? Oh, there's a whole bunch of reasons why. And it's like, well, but this is Cardiff. It's like, yeah, but we're like not like we're living in a time that people are not so like trusting of their daughter and, you know, girls and boys, you know, riding bicycles. It's like, oh, that just doesn't happen here. And it was like, really? Like, I thought I was turning back the clock, going like, you know, past my age, maybe like 50, 60, 80 years ago. And this is what life was. And I saw it on TV shows, but I've never experienced it. And then I went, and I have to say, unfortunately, that's no longer true today. And with the internet, with everything going on in the world, now there's violence there. So what I'm saying is that, you know, we have to, it's good to have, in a way, like a naive outlook on life, but not in a way that would hurt you, but in a way just it's more trusting and loving, and also be aware of that people weren't always, you know, follow that format because they grew up in a different household, and who knows, maybe there was violence, maybe there was stealing, who knows. And we just live in a world where it's a time where we need more angels to wake up, and we need more people to start saying, okay, I've done a lot of self-help, I've done a lot of things, and do more things like what you're talking about, create a community. There's a lot of people who are going through major, major loss with their dog, their cat too, and other animals. I don't want anyone being upset with me because I just mentioned dogs, okay? All animals, but I'm just going to say dog and cat, and it means all of the animals and any being that you love. But what I am finding is a lot of people are going through major, major loss. Why? Because they have them in their home, their support system. And I think that's amazing. And how do you get through? Well, do like what you're saying. You're going through a loss, create a community. Find other people who have going through dog bereavement, cat bereavement, stress. Create a community so you have like a plan. You know, I would love to do something where I can start creating plans for people doing stress management. And I called a lot of the schools during COVID to bring my plan in. And they said, sorry, we don't have the manpower to look at your program. I said, but I'm going to offer it to you for free. No, sorry, we still don't have anyone to review it. Okay. And this is what also was happening. So it really is about each person creating it on their own. So I'm doing something on my own, like creating this book, which will help people have different techniques. You know, we're all a part of life. No one's perfect. But the one thing about communication, if you have techniques, you have a way to communicate.
Joyce, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I just love talking to you and hearing all your ideas, and so does the audience. And it's so important to hear these things that give people encouragement, empowerment, enlightenment, and give them creativity and positivity out there, because we need more positivity in the world. So I hope you'll come back and we'll go and we'll talk more about these issues. And
I would love to.
But before we sign off, I want you to give any contact information that, again, before we sign off and to the audience.
Thank you so much, Rose. Okay, it's www.joycealexanderblack.com. That's my website. And if you want to hear any of my recordings, or purchase them, they're on iTunes, just put Joyce Alexander Black, M-A, or just put Joyce Alexander Black, and it will direct you there. And I so much love being on your show, and I love what you say, and I love what you do, and you're such an inspiration, and I hope everyone goes to your website and just support you, because you are amazing. You are a light in this time.
I thank you so much for that. And God bless you. And we'll talk to you again soon. All righty.
Okay. Bye. God bless you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.